We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Nobody out. 3-2 on Charlotte.
Jokic gets it across the timeline. Gets a high pick and pop with Murray.
Lindsay breaking through.
Taken away by Nathan MacKinnon. 2-on-2 with Landeskog.
He has done it again. Vaughn Miller, ladies and gentlemen.
Dumped two hands. Nikola Jokic.
Save me by Grubauer with the left pad. Oh, goodness gracious me.
Take a good look. You won't see it from long. Two-run home run. Trevor Story. Touchdown to Emmanuel Sanders.
Your Denver Sports, the Denver Sports Podcast, presented by our favorite Breckenridge Brewery. What are you drinking right now, Rudo?
We never have this one in the office, but we do today.
It's so good. I like that one. We also always have you covered with deals. And guess what? Breck Brew is Davidson's Beer, Wine, and Spirits Brewery of the Month. Download their app and enjoy a six-pack for only $7.99 all month long. It is a victory Monday today, guys. We got a Broncos win on Sunday and a Nuggets win on Sunday. Let's start off talking about the Broncos first. But first, I've got Drew Kreisman, Ryan Konigsberg, Rudo, and Patrick Lyons here, and Andre Simone on the board, and Kale on the live stream. So let's start talking about the Broncos. Drew Lock had a bounce back game. It was pretty exciting to see.
It was, and I think, you know, you mentioned it there with the bounce back. That was the most important part of it, because in a vacuum, Drew Lock and the Broncos should house the Detroit Lions. But coming off of that game in Kansas City where I said, hey, just burn the tape, and I thought that was the right thing to do, but Drew had to come out here and show us that in this game against the Lions, that was the outlier. And if you take it now, if you take out the Kansas City game, in the other three games, the offense is averaging 27 points per game with Drew Lock, and that's taking away the defensive touchdown also in the Texans game. What they score yesterday? 27 points. So that's what averages for this team now, which is pretty funny because it was only 3 weeks ago that the Broncos had not scored more than 24 points in a game for 20 straight games. Now, two out of four starts for Drew Lock, they've gone over 27 or more.
And Drew Lock became the first rookie QB to win three of his first four games. That Kansas City Chiefs game in the snow really was an outlier.
It was, and that's okay. And the funny thing is, like, you want that sort of stuff to be like a measuring stick game. I think it's just one of those things that you just have to put aside. Like, look at what that Chiefs defense is doing right now. I mean, no one likes the Chiefs. No one wants to give them credit. Their defense, while people, there was a narrative early in the season and especially last season that they're a team with a great offense and a terrible defense. That's not the case at all anymore. They have a fantastic defense. They made life miserable for the Bears last night. The Bears only scored 3 points as well, and that wasn't in a blizzard. So they're really good, and people are saying, like, oh, well, that was the best team they played. Yes, but the Broncos didn't need to beat any additional playoff teams to be in the playoff hunt right now. What I'm saying is they could have beat the Bears, they could have beat the Colts, and they could have beat the Raiders in week one, and they'd be 9-6 right now. So beating up on average and bad teams is how you make the playoffs. Sure, do you need to maybe pull off an upset here or there? Yes. But if you just take care of business against average and poor teams, you're going to be in the playoff hunt this time of year. The Broncos would be have a chance to go 10-6 if they had just won those games. So 3-1 with Drew Lock, that's a 12-4 pace. Probably a pretty easy schedule, all things considered, but that's okay. The Broncos have had a history over the last 4 years of losing games like that to teams they should have beat. The one I've brought up consistently is that they welcomed the New York Giants into a game where the Broncos were 3-1. They're coming off a bye. The Giants had no receivers. They were down to their third string running back. And then they beat the Broncos like 24-10 or something like that. So beating bad teams is the first step for coming out from the depths.
Also, I feel like the one good thing from that Kansas City Chiefs games was the fact that we got to see Drew Lock deal with adversity and come out on top. And that's something head coach Vic Fangio talked about, how he loved seeing after the game and throughout the week that it wasn't obviously it was his first loss and it was a tough one, but it wasn't completely weighing down on him. He was ready to learn. We even heard Philip Lindsay say he knows exactly, Drew Lock knows exactly what he needs to improve on, and he does that throughout the week, and they just really all respect him
and
in
how
that
about,
locker room.
And how about the adversity in the game? They went down 10-0.
Yeah.
You know, there's a time where if the Broncos went down 10-0, you'd be wondering if they were going to even score 10 points to be able to tie it back up. The team never lost confidence because they believe in Drew Lock. They knew that they should have scored, you know, 27 points in that game. They knew they would get there eventually.
And the flu, Ryan.
Yeah.
What about
flu game?
Another how the team was playing.
They had so many excuses to lose to the Lions. The whole team or half the team had the flu.
Yeah.
Even the guys who didn't end up listed on the injury report. A lot of guys woke up on Sunday morning not feeling so well. Then they lose Dalton Risner because he's sick.
Yeah.
They lose Elijah Wilkinson. They put in a couple of guys, and Jake Rogers, who was playing in his first NFL game,
mm-hmm.
Patrick Morris, who had only been on the team for 3 weeks. I mean, the amount of excuses they had to have said, well, they lost to the Lions, but there's all these things. And they completely went out there, took care of business. Huge shout-out to Mike Munchak for having Patrick Morris and Jake Rogers ready to go.
No kidding.
Their names did not get mentioned on the broadcast, except for maybe the fact that they were in.
Yep.
They came in. Their names didn't come up again because they did their jobs. That's what you want as an offensive lineman. So hat tip to those two guys, and then also a hat tip to Mike Munchak.
And they won game balls after.
Yes. And that was pretty cool.
That was special.
Especially for a guy like Morris, who's been in the locker room for a couple weeks. You know, there was a very good chance that he comes in, joins the team, never plays. No one really knows who he is. And, you know, he has a chance to earn a spot next training camp. Well, he goes out there, plays well, ends up getting a game ball, kind of earns his respect of his teammates.
Can I tip my hat to Philip Lindsay now?
Yeah, go ahead.
I love seeing it. When you talked about it last week, and so I was kind of hyper-focused on that. And it was really great to see him get involved and break open a couple of big ones. Obviously, the big touchdown run
was in the fourth.
Fourth quarter, yeah. I wasn't sure if it was at the end of the third. And it was just like, man, there it is. Like you said, you could see the future of the team playing out right in front of, like, this is the way this is supposed to operate. They're building their concept around these young guys who are going to take them to the next level. And, of course, we all love Phil, but that was just like, see, finally. I think that was the other most frustrating thing about the Kansas City game, and we talked about that a lot. But it was nice to see them get the ball in his hands.
Yeah, and with Phil, I've been talking about this since Drew came in. Like, eventually, the way that defenses are going to have to respect Drew Lock is going to open up things for Phil. And I thought that finally came to fruition in that game. And here's the thing. Like, you got to feed him. He had 19 touches yesterday. He gets 109 yards. But my friend Zach Bye had a great analogy. He said it's like a pickle jar. You just keep twisting and twisting and twisting, and eventually you twist enough and it pops. And that's how it is with Philip Lindsay. It's not a thing where, like, you can just give him 8 to 9 carries and say, like, oh, well, he should have broke one. Like, you have to keep going, and then he will get the 20, the 30, the long touchdown run. It's a thing where you got to keep going to him. 19 carries, that's where I think he should be on a game-in, game-out basis. He's now 42 yards away from becoming the first undrafted rookie or undrafted player in NFL history to go back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons to start his career. So
crazy.
Pretty awesome.
Is there anything that Lock can do in the final game of the season to kind of quiet any, you know, detractors or naysayers saying, hey, it's late in the season, and, you know, we saw what he did against Kansas City, which I ultimately think is not fair to use as a measuring stick against the class of the AFC. But it being, you know, late in the season, and it doesn't really mean quite as much. Is there anything he can do in the final game of the season to kind of prove the naysayers wrong?
I think the naysayers are few and far between at this point. He's shown that he can win, you know, by going off. He's shown that he can win by game man. I mean, yesterday was a total game manager game. One touchdown, no interceptions, 192 yards, 75% completions. Like, we didn't really know that he had that in the bag. So now he's shown you that he can win in a bunch of different ways. I think if he just goes out there and beats the Raiders, because that is a team that's playing for something, when the game kicks off, the Raiders will still believe that they can make the playoffs. So there's a real, you know, a chance to go out there and beat a team that's really competing for something. John Gruden knows Drew Lock. He coached him at the Senior Bowl. They're probably going to have a lot of different stuff schemed up to try and make life difficult for him. If he goes out there and wins that one, 4-1, I mean, I just don't know how you can argue with 4-1 as a starter. That'll be the best stretch the Broncos have had. They've only had one other 4-1 stretch since they won the Super Bowl. That was the first five games after they won the Super Bowl, kind of still riding that waves. So that will be the best stretch they've had since then. I think at that point it's undeniable.
You also you wrote a story last night talking about how this offseason will be one of the first off seasons that this team will go in knowing who their starting quarterback is and truly believing in him. And you said makes guys work harder.
Yeah, it's not one of. It is the only time since Peyton Manning left that the Broncos will be cleaning out their lockers on that Monday after the season and know that when they come back, Drew Lock is their starting quarterback. They don't have to worry about that. The wide receivers are going to want to be getting together with him in the offseason. Players are going to believe. You know, I talked to a guy in the locker room last night who believes they would have made the playoffs this year if Drew would have got in there earlier. So they believe in him. They like him. They enjoy being around him. The young players on the team are now empowered because of him, because he's young, and that's kind of the nucleus of the team. So that passing of the torch, I think, was really important, and I think it's going to start the Broncos kind of working out of this hole.
With that passing of the torch, I thought it was really cool to see Vaughn and Drew exchange jerseys yesterday. And there was a picture on Twitter that you could see the messages that they left each other. And Drew wrote on Vaughn, on his jersey to Vaughn, saying, "You believed in me from the jump, and I'm indebted forever," or something like that.
Yeah,
and
that's it gave me the confidence I needed, which is it's great. I mean, that's one thing that Vaughn is really good at, is instilling confidence in his teammates. Like, he's always the biggest fan of his teammates. A perfect example would be Tim Tebow. Like, quietly behind the scenes, a lot of the players on that defense when Tim Tebow was the quarterback of the Broncos were talking about how bad he was. And Von Miller was the opposite. Like, he was Tim Tebow's personal hype man, loved him, was talking him up in the media, was really instilling confidence in him, and even giving him credit. Like, he was saying, you know, a lot of Tebow supporters were saying, like, the defense is playing better because of Tebow. A lot of people were disputing that. Von Miller was saying it. Like, he's the best leader I've ever played for, and it inspires me to play better. So Von is very good at instilling that confidence in his teammates.
Well, last thing I want to say is that I'm not sure if we're going to have a tailgate next week. We're still deciding Sons of Mile High or not. But this season has been so much fun getting to know you guys, getting to see you guys out there. And yesterday was another example of it. It was a perfect day. It was actually hot. And we had just so much fun meeting all of you guys. So definitely be sure to come to our watch parties throughout the years for Avs and Nuggets. And then we'll probably be doing similar things for the Rockies. But yeah, so thanks for coming to those tailgates. It's just always such a good time.
They were a blast. Every last one of them was so cool. Meeting people from everywhere, from Arkansas to Austria, was pretty cool.
All right. Well, we are going to talk about the Nuggets. But unfortunately, we do not have one of our Nuggets beat writers here, so you're just going to hear from us. But they did give us a few takes. Adam Martis says, "Nuggets have won 6 in a row. Everybody is starting to look like they're back. Jokic, Barton, Harris, Murray, Millsap, Monte, Grant currently have the second best defense and 13th best offense, up from 22 2 weeks ago. And of course, Jokic, 20-10-8 over his last 10 games, 39% from three. The biggest honey."
I mean, they look like a different team. And to me, it completely started when Jokic just kind of turned it on. You felt it.
Definitely.
Actually, in the Boston game, I think it was, which is the start of that 10-game stretch, I believe, that Adam is referring to, you just felt him kind of turn on the aggression a little bit. And he just he looks like a completely different person out there. He even looks thinner. He looks more in shape. It's all kind of coming together for him. He's more aggressive. And when that offense runs through him, it makes everyone better. That's what makes Jokic Jokic. But I mean, even Gary Harris last night, like he's been
Gary
the
Harris
one
went off.
The one piece that you're still wondering, like, man, is this actually who he is now? Because it's been 2 years in a row where he hasn't really been the best. He's still a fantastic defender. He had, like, I think 3 steals on 3 straight possessions last
night.
Four.
Yeah. Four for the game.
Yeah. Four for the game. You know, finally making some of those mid-range jumpers that have given him a lot of trouble this year, starting to fall from three. But I think Adam mentioning the 39% from three for Jokic over the last 10 games, that is so huge. When he makes three-pointers, he's pretty much impossible to defend because he's too strong for you to come out there and try and, you know, stop him from getting to the lane, especially if you close out a little too hard. Once he gets into the lane, it's pretty much game over because he's either going to hit a floater or find a cutter and get a layup. It completely opens up the entire offense when he starts making those threes.
And earlier in the season, he wasn't making those, and you could see teams testing him, letting him go, make that three. And they weren't, and he just couldn't make any. So to see that improvement in these last 10 games is huge.
Yeah, I can't remember what game it was. Maybe Philly? They just let him shoot like four in a row, and he missed all four.
I think you're right.
It was like so frustrating. You can't do that now. And you know, a perfect example is Giannis, who did the same thing to the Lakers the other night. He hit 5 threes, and it was just there's no chance of guarding him. When a big man can do that, it completely changes the game.
The game we're also talking about is the Nuggets beat the Lakers last night, 128-104. The Lakers were without LeBron, but the Nuggets took advantage and had six players in double figures and really just balled out in Staples Center.
Yeah, you know, you can make this argument of it didn't really count because LeBron wasn't there. But this is what happens in the middle of the season. When the NBA starts to roll on these long season sports, teams start to lose people and depth becomes a lot more important. And you saw that the Nuggets' strength is their depth. They can, you know, they're healthy right now, but they can afford to have a few guys go out because they're a deep team. The Lakers are not that way, and most teams wouldn't be able to survive without LeBron James, but you're seeing that LeBron's now banged up. AD is banged up, and while they have been rolling through the first part of the season, they're now struggling. They've lost 3 in a row, the Lakers have, as they're starting to get banged up, and I think that's a huge sign for the Nuggets, is they're playing their best ball now as teams are starting to wear out, starting to get injured, and you see that the Lakers, they have a few nicks and bruises here and there, and they start to struggle.
Beating a team like the Lakers is a statement win. The reason the Avs Nation is on the verge of a meltdown is because the Avs haven't been able to find that statement win, and that's something that the Nuggets have, and it's something that keeps a team going. With Jokic turning on, with everything starting to click, and then you beat the Lakers, it's really easy to see the top of that mountain.
Well, and they smoked them in the second half, outscored them 73-51.
Exactly.
It was unbelievable.
73-51. And that 6th straight win put them at 20-8 on the year, which is their best record in franchise history.
And it was fun.
Wow. It was fun. It,
well, and not just because of all of that, but they're playing fun basketball again. And that's something we've talked about a couple of times, and Adam has brought up. It's like, it doesn't always have to be. Like, at the end of the day, you're looking for W's. They don't have to be pretty. But it's nice when they are. It's nice when the team looks like they're having fun playing basketball together, hitting each other for open shots. Everybody knows where everybody's going to be. That chemistry that we all thought, you know, was going to look super awesome coming into the season because they had so much turnover from years before, but oddly wasn't quite there on offense, was on defense. But to see it now on offense, it's like, oh, yeah, you guys remember how to play together. That's right. Nice. That's nice.
Yeah, it really helps the eye test. And now with 20-8, they're back to the 2 seed in the West. So right there, knocking on the door for the Lakers, who are coming back to earth. And if AD can't get right and LeBron's injury prolongs a little, I mean, the rest of their roster just isn't built to sustain that. So,
yeah, I mean, Kyle,
time to pay the piper.
And like you said, Drew, that just gives them so much confidence.
Totally. I mean, it's really, I mean, last night was probably the most fun game to watch for the Nuggets because of, you know, like Adam mentioned, all of a sudden everyone's clicking. It's so nice to see Monte Morris hitting open shots and Gary hitting open shots.
Malik Beasley.
And the weird thing is that Jamal Murray wasn't even really a part of that last night. He was, I think, 3 for 12 from the field.
Yep.
They still scored 128 points. Like, when their role players all click, they don't need Jamal to go off, and it's not even Jokic didn't go off either. You know, they have so many different pieces that can win them games. Malik Beasley, you know, all of these guys, you just need two or three of those guys to play well on a night-to-night basis. Jeremy Grant, whoever it may be, and they can beat just about any team out there.
Yeah, I think the victory says more about the Nuggets than it does the Lakers. Because if the Lakers win without LeBron, you go, okay, they've corrected their business. Six losses on the season, they're fine. They're in a good spot. But even without him and them not being able to convert that W at home, you know, at the Staples Center, I think that says a lot more about the Nuggets coming together as a team, you know, getting that second seed back, and overall, you know, just what it does for their team as a whole, and just further proves that their depth is probably their number one strength right now.
If they wouldn't have won that game last night, Nuggets Twitter probably would have had an Avs Twitter-esque meltdown, because it would have been like, oh my God, we can't even beat the Lakers without LeBron.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, they went and just wiped the floor with them without LeBron, which is really encouraging, I think.
If you want more of an in-depth analysis on last night's win, the Nuggets guys did do a live podcast yesterday, so you can go on Periscope and check that out, or just go listen to the podcast on anywhere you listen to podcasts. But the Nuggets have a back-to-back play, the second half of a back-to-back tonight against the Phoenix Suns, and the Phoenix Suns currently sit at 11-18 on the year, so this is definitely a game that they need to get, even if it's on the second end of a back-to-back.
Yeah, that's kind of a scary team to face on the other side of a back-to-back, just because they have a lot of talent, and you're on the road. The Nuggets should win if they take care of their business, but mm-hmm. you get lax, you start making excuses for yourself about being on the second night of a back-to-back. That's a team that has players that can go off and beat you.
And the dynamics are completely different right now for the Nuggets, because now, after last season in particular, they're a team that up-and-coming squads like the Suns are looking at like, hey, let's have a little statement victory right here against the Nuggets. They're coming into town. Sure, they beat the Lakers last night. This is a big game for us. And, you know, the Nuggets are kind of on the receiving end of that attitude and that mindset mm-hmm. that they are now one of the top teams in the NBA, in the Western Conference. And for smaller teams on the come up, they're going to be looking to try to, you know, have a statement victory against the Nuggets. That's where they're at right now.
Target on their back now. That's why winning last night in that fashion was so key, because the bench was able to have a lot of minutes. So now the starters are fresher for tonight than one day of rest on Christmas Eve, and you're back playing Christmas. So, you know, got to stay fresh, got to make up some wins while the Lakers are weak here. Really time to capitalize here.
And you want some national recognition, go into that Christmas game yep. with a chance to win 8 in a row. Win that, because you're playing the Pelicans, who are not very good. Win 8 in a row on, you know, the biggest NBA day of the regular season.
Here.
People are going to be talking about you, especially because the Lakers are banged up right now. They got to go play a really good Clippers team. You know, by the end of this, you could be two games away from them in the loss column.
Sign me up.
Speaking of the bench, Vlatko Chanchar, I feel like he would have won the week for Brendan if he was here. Got his first NBA points and had an assist for Juancho. At the end of the game, you got to see everyone, which is always fun.
To be able to play a victory cigar against the Lakers in the Staples Center was pretty awesome.
I love the idea of a guy getting one bucket and one assist and winning the week, though.
I wish you
Brendan
could see
just have such love for him. I don't even know how to explain it.
Yeah. I wish we could play the video from Juancho's Instagram story of him congratulating Chanchar. It was pretty great.
I got to start picking stuff like that to win the week. Like somebody's Instagram story won the week.
Yes.
Like, see, that's right. I need to be thinking
outside. Maybe that's where you'll win.
Yeah.
That's savvy right there. That's savvy. I like it.
All right, well, the holidays are coming up, and if you don't know what to get your fam last-minute gifts, you can obviously get them a DNVR gift subscription, or you can get them a nice bottle of wine, some nice tequila, scotch, even some beer. Whatever it is, Total Bev is giving the DNVR fam 30% off your purchase of $25 or more with a max discount applying up to $75 using the promo code DNVR2019 online or on the Total Beverage app. Download that today and don't miss out on this deal. Now, we've got some Avs to talk about.
Hockey.
Unfortunately.
I know. Yesterday I put out a tweet of all the teams in Colorado that won during the weekend, and I had a few sad Avs fans.
You guys are celebrating Victory Monday, and the Avs are just kind of sitting here like, huh.
Please, we need a win tonight.
Don't forget Colorado Eagles Yeah. Won a nice game last night, 7-5.
They've scored like 22 goals in their last four games or something, too. Like, wow. It is some fun hockey up in Northern Colorado.
24. Go watch that. 24.
There you go.
So they had 10 on Wednesday night.
That's a lot. Crazy.
Yes.
So if the Avs aren't scoring for you.
Isn't that the most in franchise history?
That was the most in franchise history since joining the AHL. And the most in the AHL this season so far.
It might be the most in the ECHL, but back before that, they were... Hockey was bad below the ECHL. We'll put it that way.
So, yeah, hockey was bad. The Avs have lost two straight games. In the final minutes, after having a lead, their last to the Chicago Blackhawks, it's just... We were all sitting here talking about, like, all right, that St. Louis loss, like, calm down, everyone. It's okay.
No big deal.
And then even...
You got the Blackhawks on the schedule. Yeah, right.
Even that Panthers game, we're like, okay, this is where they'll bounce back. And then that... I feel like the Panthers game was disappointing because it was in the last 2 minutes of the game.
Yeah, the Hurricanes.
You mean the Hurricanes, right?
Hurricanes. Yeah.
Well, you'd be right about the Panthers game a month ago as well.
Well, there are all these bad losses are... getting combined.
Carolina, Florida, they're both on the East Coast. It's
the ECHL.
Yeah.
Bad hockey. It's all tying together.
But this last one to the Blackhawks was, it's the Blackhawks.
Yeah.
How do you let that happen?
Right. The Carolina game, there were a lot of other factors to it. The Avs were on the second half of a back-to-back. They blew it in the last couple of minutes because they just didn't have any legs left. It was clear they were dead now. I don't really want to get into the Bednar coaching decision to sit Zadorov because
I want to get into that.
We did an entire podcast about how it was a bad decision. But there were plenty of reasons where you say, okay, maybe you let that one slide. It's disappointing. They should have won, but
I feel like you don't really need legs to park the bus.
Kind of.
The faces everyone just made to Ryan is like, oh, no.
It's very much a soccer
thing. The problem
was
that they didn't park the bus.
Well, so in hockey, or at least in the AV circles, we call it the turtle, where you just give up trying to play offense entirely. You stop skating. And what ends up happening is because you're not skating, you just end up getting even more tired because you end up chasing the play and falling behind the other team and you just can't get off the ice. And it's exhausting and it just keeps compounding until you just break.
And also in hockey too, Ryan, it's called park the Zamboni.
Oh, there you go.
You should know that.
Good stuff.
So that's kind of what happened in the Carolina game. And I understand that even if they should have won. The Chicago game, there's no excuse. That's just not a game you can lose, especially not like that. You have a 3-1 lead in the third period. You get a power play early in the third. You could put the game away. We're not even talking about this. If they score on the power play, Chicago just goes home and they take the loss. Instead, they fail to put the dagger home, and then Chicago comes back on them. And the concerning part isn't giving up the first goal. You say, okay, one bad play. They still have a 1-goal lead. It's the panic they played with after the first goal, the fear of playing not to lose.
And that can go back to Bednar coaching decision of not calling a timeout there.
Something we talked about a lot, and I go back and forth on this one. He absolutely should have called the timeout after the second goal once they tied the game up. Before that, I think, is a little bit premature. That's very hindsighty to say, oh, well, obviously you have to call it there. But when they scored 2 goals in a row, you can – see clearly something is very wrong here. This wasn't one bad shift. Something has gone sideways. And then I talked about this the other day as well. They got away with it, but 20 seconds after Chicago had tied the game, they took a penalty. And it was like, obviously, you guys cannot do anything right now. Just take your time out, even if it's just to slow the Blackhawks down for a second, just to change the pace a little bit. You have to do something.
Like a basketball timeout when the other team's on a run.
Exactly, just to ice them a little bit or whatever. It's one of the few things that Bednar as a coach can actually do to change the momentum of a game like that.
The Avs also had multiple power plays to start the game, and they just couldn't execute on almost any of them.
Same thing against Carolina.
Yeah, the power play is a massive issue. There's
a reason for that.
Well, Ray Bennett is the reason, I think, for the most part.
Shouts to Ray.
That's also a superstar that isn't on the power play right now.
Look, Cale Makar makes it better, but more talent overcoming a bad system is still a bad system.
Fair enough.
That's
talk about that all the time.
Yeah,
the Broncos.
Exactly. So that's my problem with it. It's going to continue to get by. Cale Makar, it sounds like he's going to play against Vegas. He took regular jersey in morning skate. He's not. Okay. Yeah. There. I was 50-50 on it, so.
Not playing. Okay.
Not.
That's fine with me.
Not super surprised by it. A little weird that they even took him on the trip, to be honest, then. But that's perfectly fine to let him have the three-day break after this. Be 100%. He can come back and do his thing. So I think that's fine. The Avs need to prove that they can win without Cale Makar. So.
We got AJ in the in the Periscope saying, take your GD timeouts.
Yeah.
And got them for a reason.
And then someone else saying, stop doing these because I need these pods for drives to work. Well, don't watch the Periscope and listen to it on the podcast.
They'll be posted as podcasts. The other point about the timeouts is it's not just that Bednar is not using them at appropriate times. He's not using them at all.
Yeah.
It's every game he walks away from them with an unused timeout. So it's a problem that, you know, it's not the end of the world. It's a pretty minor thing in a game where if the Avs won 3-1, no one's talking about that timeout at all. But the minor things are where the Avs need to improve. They're a good enough team that the minor things are starting to matter, and it's those type of things that keep you from blowing a two-goal lead in a game like that against Chicago.
You talk about these issues without Cale Makar, but he's still the superstar on that defense at the moment, so not having him, it's like not having Nathan MacKinnon on the offense.
Absolutely. It's a huge effect. The team is markedly better, I think. For a lot of people, it took Makar coming out of the lineup to realize, oh, this kid has a massive impact. Right, exactly. He does something that no one else on the team does.
Yeah.
And the kid's truly special. I'm going to say that on every single show I go on, basically, because you could make an argument that he's a top three defenseman in the league right now as a rookie. Even with this injury, he's still running away with the Calder Trophy this year. Everything the Avs do, if you run it through Makar, it has that extra special it factor where he can just blow the game wide open for you on his own and does not need the team around him.
So AJ Haefeli is letting us know.
If AJ wants to be on the podcast, he can come here.
He's telling us news. Go away. Makar told Bednar he wasn't ready. Bednar wanted to play him with a broken heart.
That's a very Makar answer. Makar has always been a very patient guy. The Avs wanted to sign him after his first year in college, and he said no. I'm not ready. I'm going to go back for that second year. Obviously, that worked out pretty well for everybody involved. So he has always taken that patient track. He knows what he can bring at 100% is significantly better than whatever it is that 80, 70, whatever.
That's maturity at being 21 years old. Exactly. Being like, you know what? I need just more time.
He knows himself as an NHL player very, very well for someone of that age. And
we got Eric saying Malone used to have huge timeout issues as well.
So does Tad Boylan. We'll talk about him in a sec.
Well, Makar's got to, you know, he's got to be, this is his first full season in the NHL.
Right.
So he's got to be thinking about, it's like a pitcher in baseball where, you know, if your team's going to be making a run deep in the postseason, then, you know, you need to have a couple extra bullets in the chamber to go late in October. So I think with Makar, he's thinking that, you know, this game isn't the be-all, end-all. So let me take this opportunity to, you know, get a day off, if you will.
And we talk about the college wall a lot, especially. Prospects coming out of the NCAA play a significantly shorter season. They almost never survive the full 82-game season. Makar can take this break. Yeah, it's an injury, so he's not getting fully rested. He's still practicing, things like that. But you roll that into the Christmas roster freeze, no practicing over Christmas. Maybe that gets an extra 2 weeks out of Cale Makar in the second half of the year. And that's huge for the Avs when they're in competition for home ice in the playoffs, because that's what they're fighting for.
And if I may just sew the silver lining into this, the Avs have had this weird thing going where they've had all these injuries. But each time a guy has come back, it's been at a time where things got a little stale and it gave them a little boost. Gabe comes back, they get a little boost. Miko comes back, they get a little boost. Now Kale's going to come back after the break and give them a little boost, and it's almost like a little shove from behind to get them going again.
Yeah, it has worked out surprisingly well in that regard to get the players back, and almost all of them, it's not just a team boost, that player has come back and had an immediate impact picking up points or making defensive plays or whatever you want to call it. So all of the hype around, oh, this team is going to be so good when they're healthy, is starting to come together, and I think that's something to hold on to. The Avs blew two leads in a row. That's bad hockey. It's two games. 82-game season. They're still an extremely good hockey team. You can't blow a lead without getting ahead 3-1. And there are clearly things that they need to correct in their third period play. They need to get over this little bit of a mental block that they seem to have. When they lose to the Blues, they kind of go a little bit haywire at times. But if they come out against Vegas and look solid, if they come off this break and get Makar back and win a couple of games, nobody's going to remember these two losses.
Again, it's just added adversity that this team has already had so much of, and they've been able to succeed. There are going to be times where you slow down and you fall. And these guys are angry. I mean, Eric Johnson after the game was saying things. He was very receptive, but he was saying things like, you can't give away all those points. He's a veteran on that team. He said, yeah, we're a young team, but that just is unacceptable.
And that's something a little bit different than teams in previous years for the Avs. They know they should have won those games. They know they could have won those games. In years past, they would have said, well, we should have won that game, but, you know, they're a good team and we got beat. Now it's, we lost that game. Mm-hmm. We know how to win those games. Mm-hmm. We can win those games.
It's very akin to the Broncos beating the Lions, where you're like, hey, that's a game you're supposed to win. Obviously, in hockey, the season's about, you know, four times as long, so it's not as big of a deal for them to not be able to, you know, to get the points against the Blackhawks. But, you know, ultimately they'll rebound on it because it's a long season. Rudo, do you think Makar will be named a starter to the All-Star game?
To the All-Star game, no. I think he might go as kind of the rookie contingent that they usually bring. Maybe he competes in some of the skills competitions, mm-hmm. things like that. It's really, really hard to get to the NHL All-Star game as a defenseman because they run the 3-on-3 systems. Mm-hmm. So each team only really gets to bring two or three defensemen for each division, which there are only four of. So very, very hard to get to there. Will he be in his future? Absolutely, 100%. It would be funny to see if you could somehow get three Avs in there again and just have the Avs All-Star team, but with the injuries, not this time. It'll just be McKinnon at the having fun, I guess.
You don't think Mikko will make it in there?
Not with the injuries.
Yeah. Man. But even with the injuries, he still has a lot of goals compared to other players on the NHL.
The Avs top six disappeared in the Chicago game, yeah. And I don't care about that because they've been absolutely excellent for 90% of the season, and if they're going to go away for one game and come right back, then that's perfectly fine.
The most frustrating thing, I guess, about these last two is that they couldn't just get a point out of
right.
each of them.
That,
you know, like,
that's what
you hang on for another
bit.
Minute,
exactly.
And you're getting a point.
If they had gotten 2 points, I don't care how they got the 2 points, whether it's one win or two overtimes or whatever out of these two games, the pressure would be off from the fan base by quite a bit more, I think, because they'd be saying, well, those were bad, but you didn't come away empty-handed. You're keeping pace with the rest of the division. Now it feels like, oh, they left something on the table.
I'd love to never think about these games again, but I am worried that at the end of the season, when they're fighting for the number one seed, we're going to say, man, they could have just gotten 2 points in those two games.
And it may come back to haunt them in that regard, absolutely. These are the games you look at when you say, this is what separates the best team in a division from the second best. Now, you make it in the playoffs in the NHL, it's anybody's game from there.
Right.
But it shows that this team still has room to hit their ceiling, I think. They are very good. I believe they're a contender. They are not playing their best hockey. And if they ever figure out how to play their best hockey, there's no team in the league that can beat them.
Brian, I've had those same thoughts about the seeding, but it's funny because if they miss out on the top seed and they're number two, well, that means they're going to be playing the seventh seed as opposed to the eight, who is the hottest team,
yes,
usually
dangerous
coming into the playoffs.
Eight.
So it may end up being, you know, somewhat of a godsend, right?
True.
Whatever keeps them as far away from the Blues as possible,
yeah,
in the playoffs.
I agree with that one.
Because of the way the divisions work, in the second round, they would have to go to St. Louis, which would not be fun.
Kale just said a lot.
Yeah.
He has no microphone.
Yeah. he made a great point, though.
Yeah,
you
insert good point by Kale.
You guys, this guy.
Hockey playoffs are fun. You have all the good matchups in the first two rounds because that's just how it's designed, and it's weird, but I'm cool with it.
All right, so the Avs do take on the Vegas Golden Knights tonight. How you made a comment kind of like, if they'd play well, do you not think it's going to be a win for them?
I think they absolutely can win. It's in Vegas. They bopped this team 7-1 last time in Vegas. Vegas remembers that. Yeah. They're going to play this team very tough. And I think it basically is going to come down to the top line.
I also don't think after those two losses you have to worry about like a Vegas hangover type of thing.
No.
I don't think they're out there partying.
The Avs are going to come to play, and I expect a big game out of the big three up front. They're going to take it to this Vegas team, and it's going to be about them holding on, understanding that they need to play confident. They cannot play scared if they get ahead in this game.
And no one likes having fun more than hockey players. You get a win here, you're going right into a break. You could probably convince the guys, like, hey, let's go win this and then take over Vegas for a couple days.
Yeah, AJ can join them because he'll be out there covering the
game. Alex Ovechkin-style take over Vegas?
Yes.
Oh, my God, that man. Good for him, but oh, my God.
Might look like after he won the cup, diving into fountains and things like that.
Live your best life.
It is a doubleheader tonight with the Avs playing at 8 p.m. against the Golden Knights and the Nuggets taking on the Suns at 7 p.m. So we got two great sports going on tonight. Time to talk about more basketball, though, because CU and CSU men's basketball teams both won this weekend. CSU won in triple overtime, and then CU won in overtime. Let's start off with CU. They had an incredible buzzer beater win in overtime against the Dayton
Flyers.
Flyers.
Because that's where the Wright brothers were originally from.
Look
at
you.
Always have such fun.
That's it, right? Before Kitty Hawk, it was Dayton, Ohio.
Amazing.
The Wright brothers.
Ryan, you screamed and ran around after this.
I lost my voice for like hours just off one play. It was an incredible win. And here's the thing about Buffs basketball for those who don't know. This season has been very similar to the Nuggets in the sense that they've been winning. They had one loss that they shouldn't have, one loss to Kansas on the road, which was supposed to happen. But
so they're 10-2 on
the There road. Hadn't been anything that made you feel like overtly great about this team, even though there's really high expectations for them coming into the season. And for them to go into Chicago, which was essentially an away game for them, there's about 5,000 Dayton fans in that stadium at least, and beat number 13 in the nation and really beat them. I mean, after an initial run where Dayton came out and kind of put them down, they really just outplayed them for the entire rest of the game. Left a guy wide open. Shouldn't have been in overtime in the first place. But to go out there and to win in that fashion with the walk-off three was really, really huge for them. Not only for their NCAA tournament hopes, which with the way that Tad Boyle set up the schedule for them, should be a foregone conclusion at this point, but just for their confidence. They're about to go into conference play. They have one more game before they open up Pac-12 play. And now they believe what I think they wanted to believe before the season, which is they can beat anyone in the country. Dayton is really, really good. The same team that that the Buffs lost to in Kansas, Dayton took them to overtime. So they're really good. They earned that 13 ranking, and the Buffs just went in there and outplayed them, which is really encouraging.
We finally had a chance to see McKinley Wright play and go off in the way that we've been hoping for years now. He had 29 points, a season high.
Yes, thank you to the Dayton fans.
Yes.
Who just asked for it from it. They got what they asked for.
Dayton had committed, McKinley Wright had committed to Dayton and then decommitted and came to CU.
Yeah, after their coach left. Yes. Like, it's not like he just spurned them. Like, they lost their coach, so he changed
his mind. So Dayton fans were mad and were booing him and yelling at him, and that just made him more hyped up. And at the end of the game, what did he do? He went up to the Dayton fans and
he like stood on top of a chair and was just like highlighting the Colorado on
like
his jersey.
Superman style,
which is awesome.
Beautiful.
And then after the game he said like, I needed those boos. Those boos fueled me, which is just so awesome. So yes. To anyone in the Pac-12, please boo McKinley Wright every time he touches the ball.
So Colorado State, like I said, had a crazy triple overtime win over the Tulsa Golden Hurricanes. The teams were tied 1-4 during that third overtime, and Isaiah Stevens drained a three-pointer to give the Rams a lead, and Tulsa didn't score again. So that was another really crazy win.
Both teams should not have gone into overtime in the first place, but they ended up getting taken care of business. And that's not easy to do. Like, it shows a lot of mental toughness for a team. When you have a letdown late in the game and it goes into overtime, you usually have no momentum going into that period. Both teams showed a lot of mental toughness to still pull out a victory.
So we've talked a lot before, and I think come to the consensus that hockey right now has the best overtime. I don't know if that has been our consensus.
I don't need a consensus. That's the rules.
It just is, right?
It's a consensus.
However, when basketball goes double or triple, you get into triple overtime in basketball, I don't care if it's middle school kids in sweatpants. I am watching that game. A triple overtime. That's one of the things that, you know, baseball will let you go forever and a walk-off home run's fun, but it doesn't build tension the same way. Hockey cuts you off after one.
Not in the playoffs.
I can't wait for you to watch a triple overtime in the playoffs.
Triple overtime in the playoffs.
No.
It kills you.
But in regular seasons or whatever, I mean, so it's still probably hockey, but a triple overtime basketball game.
There's a lot of truth to that because when that went down, my initial thought was Nuggets Trailblazers because we had a Rockies game. We had a Rockies game that night. Game was over. I forget what happened in the game. It didn't matter. But everybody,
I think they lost.
I mean, I don't know what happened for the Rockies, but no one seemed to care. Everybody had deadlines, and we're just sitting up there in the press box of Coors Field, and all these baseball guys that I've never heard, you know, mention Jamal Murray, you know, Wancho. None of those names came out of their mouths. But we were all glued to the television watching that game, and that's true, Drew. Like, that is just something that if you have a flair for the dramatics, I mean, you can't turn away from something like that.
I think that's exactly it. When you're talking about quadruple overtime, you're not even talking about sports fans. There's so much drama in an event like that that everyone is just tuning in like, this is going to be talked about for the next week.
Who's going to blink? Meanwhile, the Rockies can play 18 innings in San Francisco and then lose when their catcher can't find home plate.
Oh, God.
Oh my God.
These have been so killer.
And everyone just goes, ugh.
We're talking about quality of overtime, though, and entertainment value. We have to mention college football. College football overtime is fantastic.
The QOO on college football is very good. Quality of overtime.
Yes, the QOO.
I don't love it, but I also kind of hate it.
I don't want the NFL to adopt it.
I want the NFL to adopt it. Just change.
But your argument that you're about to make is the same argument that you could make against hockey overtime. Like, it's not the real sport.
That's true.
Like,
see, hockey tricks you because they have the 3-on-3 and then have the not real sport of the shootout after it.
Right. So. It's like as the game goes on, it becomes progressively less of the hockey. Sport.
Soccer suffers from that exact same thing too.
It'd be like if college football, like after doing the 25-yard thing, then went to like a throwing competition for the quarterback
or field goal, and it's like the other team. It's almost like you're playing a horse.
You go back 5 yards at a time. Oh, that'd be really.
Or you play horse, but it's field goal. And it's like, okay, what hash mark do you set up from?
Those kickers already have so much.
I want football to take on the hockey method. For overtime, you have to play 7-on-7. And then if you keep going down.
That'd be fantastic.
See, that would be baseball, great for the Broncos because they already don't have a line.
Baseball.
I experienced, I was in the arena for a triple overtime in hockey. The Caps, I don't remember who they were playing, but it was like a school night. I was in high school, and it was like, oh my God, when is this game going to end? And you felt like you were dying because of all of the emotions. And then they scored, I think, with like 0.6 seconds left in the game in triple overtime to win. The Caps won.
I struggled to find a better description of NHL playoff overtime than it felt like you were dying.
Oh, that's every second.
Even if you don't care about the teams, you're just like, oh my God, what is going on? It's too much.
It's really, really bad for your health.
All right, well.
You're better off going outside and smoking an entire pack of cigarettes.
Just chain.
Yes.
Speaking of health. Did you guys know taking care of your teeth is pretty important? Our friends over at Green Mountain Dental Group are giving away a free Sonicare toothbrush when you schedule a cleaning, x-ray, and exam. That's right. You simply just have to take care of your teeth, and Green Mountain Dental Group hooks you up with a free Sonicare toothbrush. Check them out today online or call them at 303-988-0711 to schedule your appointment today.
You're going to need to call them if you do take Ryan's advice and smoke an entire pack of cigarettes.
Some real yellow teeth.
Or if you watch playoff hockey and grind your teeth down to nothing.
For sure.
The thoughts of Ryan Konigsberg are not supported by
anyone. Really much.
Ryan's like, I want it to be known. Please do not do that. Guys.
Who did the most and who did the least? Who was the dog and who was the beast? Who's in? Up a creek, let's see who won the week.
Before we get to this segment,
you gotta let it play to the end.
It's done. There's nothing.
That part is important.
Let the symbol kind of trail away.
The jazz hands.
The way that the musician designed it is the way it should be heard.
Well, I don't want it to go on to playing like Colorado swag or whatever Broncos week's audio I have on my iTunes. Before we get to who won the week, we have a question on the Periscope. Chelsea 1337 said, is Locke the best thing for Denver since sliced bread? Ryan?
No. Peyton Manning was probably better, but he's the best thing to happen.
Wait, when did Denver get sliced bread?
Oh, right, that's true. We were having to loaf it for a while. He's the best thing to happen since Peyton Manning for the Broncos, that's for sure. So it's really, really, really good that they finally have a quarterback. Yeah.
All right, so last week, the Avs won, no surprise. Not Drew's Avs, though.
Oh, you didn't have to specify.
We had two Avs votes. The one that won by 43% of the votes, Pavel Francouz, won the week because he had two dominant weeks, and he's continued that. The one that didn't win was Avs because they lost to the St. Louis Blues because they get to learn from the hurt.
Come on, people. How can you not understand that your team losing was good? I don't understand why I couldn't get Avs
they
fans
also
to vote for that.
Didn't really learn from the hurt.
Yeah, they,
did not.
They
I was
again.
Wrong. Wow. My hockey
time.
Analysis has room to grow.
The Avs have to get hurt a lot to learn. It's a process.
After that, the Broncos, because now they get to look at a new version of Drew Locke, got 30%, and then Nuggets for Nikola Jokic being back got 25%.
Well, prophetic, though, looking at a new version of Drew Locke.
Yeah.
And there you go.
Wow, I was prophetic. It's never happened before.
I think it's also prophetic that the fans didn't take up Drew on his
they knew.
Embracing
they,
the hair.
They're
like,
knew.
Did they? Will they? I don't, yeah. Not yet.
They're
not
like, Drew,
yet.
You're new to this.
They're
we
like,
know what
let
happens
me wait.
When they lose the
Yeah. They're like, wait, I will vote. Oh, nope, never mind. Not
fans
voting.
And voters know. Yeah, Avs Nation.
Do I get a winner's circle?
Yes,
no?
You do.
Okay. All right, I didn't know.
Go.
Shout out to the Avs prospects and to Patrick Lyons covering the Colorado Eagles this week. We already mentioned they had an incredible week. Kevin Connaughton, I think, was involved in nearly half of their 24 goals. He's having an amazing time. Martin Kaut is back and healthy, getting involved in the offense. Shane Bowers has 5 points in his last five games. Everything is coming together in the Avs' depth of their organization, and there are some issues, but we're not going to talk about that in the winner's circle.
Oh, look at you.
Hit the post.
30 seconds. Oh, my God.
The crossbar.
The post. That's a sore subject for Avs fans.
Fun post video coming out tomorrow on Twitter. So.
Is it going to be a good post? Is that what you're saying?
I mean, it might trigger some people depending on your post PTSD. But
fair enough.
That just reminded me of Matt Calvert's goal that went like ricocheted off the goalie's butt. That was pretty cool.
If he could do that on purpose, he'd be one of the greatest hockey players
that
ever.
Was on purpose.
It was not.
Did he claim it?
He very clearly just threw that puck out into the open
and
ice, and it happened to happen.
See,
to
I
work
thought
out
he
for.
Was trying to bank it.
No way.
He was playing pool.
That's the hockey version of the double doink.
Definitely.
It was a single doink.
It could be a single doink more.
It was a single doink. I thought it might have caught both cheeks, but you're right.
It's as much a doink as it is a butt fumble,
it
I
hit
think.
His pad. It wasn't even as. Whatever.
So they're all very official terms. Plus, if they've got post PTSD, that would, of course, be PTSD.
Yeah, PTSD.
It would also have power play PTSD, which would be PPPTSD.
Yeah. That one might be the worst
of the three, I think.
I believe it is. The power play is killing me. That's what's killing me. Convert
well,
one. Let's
Vic,
go.
Vic Fangio just came out and said they're looking for Drew Locke to be the QB of the future. We already talked about that, but just thought
I'd
let you guys know.
They're looking for Drew Locke. They have no idea where they left him.
Drew Locke is missing.
If anyone's seen him, please call 303.
All right. Let me get back to my timer. We'll start with you, Rudo.
All right.
Why did the Avs win the week? Go.
Sam Girard won the week. Not for quality hockey, not for anything
for
like that, but because he has the featherweight championship belt in the NHL now.
Nice.
Alex DeBrincat got put down. This is a call out to Johnny Gaudreau, Rocco Grimaldi. Sam Girard is ready to take on all comers for the belt. Bring it.
Oh, and you're done.
That's
10 seconds.
That's all I needed.
That was... Oh, my God. I saw highlights of that fight again. I was like, Sammy. What?
Nobody knew he could throw punches like that. It was really out of left field.
Also, Landeskog got into a fight during that
Blackhawks
game.
Well, that was just – he has dad strength now, so that's not even fair. Mm-hmm. I mean,
It happens.
I was like, oh, wow, Landy. Okay.
I mean, that dude deserved it.
But confirmed. Like you guys tweeted about, it wasn't a good player trade out. So no, it wasn't the smartest.
Landy's a way better hockey player than that guy. Yeah. So it didn't
sometimes
really.
You just got to throw down.
Right.
I felt like it was like Michael Malone getting a technical like on purpose to kind of rally the team. I feel like that's what it was.
Sure.
From your captain.
Probably to some extent.
Didn't work.
Maybe. Yeah. Well, I think.
Or maybe he needed to get another fight later. Just keep fighting people. See if it works.
AJ, I'm not reading what you wrote.
It's pretty funny, though. Give him that.
All right, Ryan, why did the Broncos win the week?
Oh, I'm not choosing the Broncos.
Oh.
Well, there are many candidates, but Deshaun Schwartz
won
the week.
Someone called it on Twitter.
I mean, how can you not give it to it? This is a Colorado kid who fulfilled his dream of playing in the Pac-12, playing for the Colorado Buffaloes. He's had some ups and downs to his career. But in the biggest game of the season for the Buffs, in overtime, you know, people remember the buzzer beater, and the buzzer beater was amazing, and that's why he won the week. But he scored 8 points in that overtime. He had an amazing driving layup earlier to tie the game. He won the week. It's not even close. There's no way anyone else can win this.
I agree with
that. By the way, he's all over SportsCenter. I mean, hands down. What?
Oh, I gave up on the buzzer.
There was no buzzer because Deshaun Schwartz already beat it.
Oh, I got so many. You guys complained way too much about which buzzer sound I was using and everything, so I gave up on that.
I never once complained about the buzzer.
I think you did.
I would never. I don't know. It's
the buzzer was pretty bad.
For people who aren't Buffs fans, maybe you'll remember this game is being compared to that buzzer beater win against Kansas at Coors Event Center, who that's been talked about a lot in.
Yeah, not quite as epic just because it wasn't like a court storm at home, bank shot, you know, but it was so glorious. You only get a few buzzer beaters as a fan, like by your team, a true buzzer beater for the win to do it basically on the road against the number 13 team in the country. That's special.
All right.
And a hometown kid at that. I'm going to keep going until you stop it.
I'll kick you out. Who wants to go first between you guys? Are you choosing the Rockies? Oh, you said you had a Rockies one.
I got a Rockies take.
All right. Go.
So the Rockies won the week, and it's
remember, you have 30 seconds.
Well, not anymore.
I thought I have a minute.
No, it's changed.
Oh, yeah, it's changed.
Now you have 20 seconds.
Let him start again. Let him start again.
Okay.
It's brutal.
Okay. Shoot. All right. We'll start over. Go.
The Rockies won the week not because seemingly all of the free agent catchers have now been taken off the market, meaning there's only so many more left, but they won the week, in particular David Dahl, because three of the best left-handers in the National League are now in the American League. Dallas Keuchel of the Braves, of course, is now in the White Sox, and two interdivision lefties have changed locations. Madison Bumgarner, he's still with the Diamondbacks in the West, but a slightly more friendly hitter's ballpark than at Oracle Park, and Hyunjin Ryu recently signed with Toronto. So the left-handers in the Rockies lineup will benefit from that out there in the NL West.
All right, I gave you an extra 5 seconds because you're new to it, and I wanted you to finish your statement.
That's the holiday spirit, Al. I appreciate it.
Also, David Dahl has the cutest dog in the world, so
I feel like that's
a
really, really good answer, but it's just not going to play to Twitter.
No.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
I know.
Very nuanced. Except for saying that Madison Bumgarner, that didn't really add up.
No. I know. I'm in the room. Okay,
It's 30 seconds.
You need more than that, but I got to say, I think Mad Bum in Arizona is going to be problematic.
I can't wait to see Trevor Story just planting in the left field seats as he often does.
He won't be as effective as at Oracle Park.
Exactly.
All right, Drew. Go.
The Denver Nuggets won the week because they won six games in a row and beat the Lakers.
Time.
That'll play to Twitter.
Plus all that stuff Adam said. Will the thrill is back, baby. Jokic. I mean, they're all playing great. You can't pick any one of them whenever your team's playing so well. You're like, five guys could have won the week. The Denver Nuggets won the week. I actually don't think it's that close. They play professional sports. Congratulations to the Buffs. I'm happy for you. But
I thought
we retime it. No, you're right.
I thought it was a mic drop.
It was.
Then you kind of ruined it.
I know. I picked my own mic back up after dropping it.
You're like, wait. Yeah.
Hold on.
Encore.
You got someone on Twitter saying, or on Periscope, good take, Patrick.
There's one vote for you.
One vote.
Thanks, Mom.
All right. We do have
6 months from
something
now when they're crushing all the right-handed pitchers in the NL West.
I'll remember.
Okay, we do have something to read in the comments. Guys, go leave us questions so we can read them and make this podcast even longer and make Andre not like us. Drew Chia came back onto the pod. He left a wonderful post last time that Drew read, and that he said that comment was a fun ride, wasn't it? Thanks to Drew for bringing everything to life, and if your cameo does take off, then you're welcome.
Thank you.
I was just so surprised to hear that Adizio was hired coming off a record of 44-44 at BC. It seemed like such a vanilla and middle of the road hire that wouldn't have moved the needle too much either way.
It's such a vanilla hire that Ali doesn't even know how to say
Adizio,
his name.
Adizio, how do you say
Adazio.
It?
Adazio.
Sorry.
I mean, that's par for the course for CSU.
Yeah.
Thank you all for a great podcast that I look forward to every week. P.S. Hey Arnold, Season 1, Episode 19B, 24 Hours to Live, 30 Rock, Season 4, Episode 2, Into the Crevice. Thanks, Drew.
Hashtag all Drews are awesome. Thanks, Drew.
All Drews are awesome. And we've got some new reviews on iTunes. So thank you to everyone who's left reviews. Keep doing that. Send us your questions. And we hope you guys have a wonderful holiday week. And we'll see you guys next week.
Happy holidays.
Bye. Drew, can we get a song?
No.
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 Are we still live?
No.
He's not
But it's for the podcast.
I was gonna say
hate when you say that.
I was going to say.